Pull up a chair. I want to tell you about a day when the biggest airplane in America let go of the strangest airplane in America, and everybody on that dry lakebed held their breath at the same time. It's August 12, 1977, out over the high desert of California, and that date is why we're here today. This is Radio Hangar. I'm Tail Dragger, and you're listening to The Hangar, where we don't just read you the history. We climb up in it and go for a ride. Now, 49 years ago today, out at Edwards Air Force Base, they were about to do something nobody had ever done. They were going to take a spaceship, a real one, and see if it could fly like an airplane, not launch it, not orbit it, just drop it out of the sky and find out if a pilot, a human being with a stick and rudder, could bring the thing home to a runway. And the answer to that question was going to decide whether the whole space shuttle program was worth a nickel. Before I get into it, let me tell you who's keeping the lights on today. Today's show is brought to you by AviationSoul.com. Aviation challenge coins for every milestone in flight. First solo, private pilot, instrument rating, all the way up the ladder. If you've earned it, they've got a coin for it. And I'll tell you, there's something honest about a coin. You can't fake it. You either did the thing or you didn't. Every coin tells a story. Go find yours at AviationSoul.com. All right, let's set the scene, the space shuttle. When it was still just drawings and arguments was a strange promise. The idea was a spacecraft that came home like an airplane. Wheels down on a runway, roll it into the barn, check the oil, fly it again. Nobody had done that. Everything that had ever come back from space up to that point came back under parachutes and splashed into the ocean, and you needed a whole Navy task force to go fish it out. This new bird was supposed to glide. And here's the trouble with that. A shuttle has the glide characteristics of a set of car keys. It comes down steep, it comes down fast. It has no engine to help you on final. You get one shot, one approach, no go-around, no throttle to firewall if you come up short. When that orbiter starts down, it is committed and so are you. So before anybody was going to strap a crew on top of a rocket and light it, somebody smart said, hold on. Let's find out if this thing can even be landed by a human being. Let's prove the gliding part down here in the atmosphere, where if it all goes wrong, at least you're not falling from orbit. They built an orbiter just for this. Number one off the line. She was called Enterprise. Now here's where it gets interesting. And this is one of my favorite little pieces of the whole story. That ship was supposed to be named Constitution. It was going to roll out on Constitution Day, patriotic, tidy. But this was 1976, and there was a certain TV show with a certain devoted following, and the fans of that show ran a letter-writing campaign. Hundreds of thousands of letters right to the White House, and they won. The first space shuttle rolled out of the factory in Palmdale wearing the name Enterprise, and when they unveiled her, they had the cast of the show standing right there, and a band playing the theme song, She Would Never Go to Space. Not once. Enterprise was a glider, no engines that worked, no heat shield tiles that could take the fire of re-entry. She was a full-size, full-weight airplane, built to answer exactly one question. Can a pilot fly this shape down to a landing? But now you've got a problem. How do you get a 150,000-pound glider up high enough to glide? You put it on the back of a Boeing 747. They took a 747, an old airliner, and they stripped her out and beefed her up and bolted three big struts on the top of the fuselage. They called her the shuttle carrier aircraft, and they would mate Enterprise to the back of that jumbo jet, nose forward, and the 747 would haul the whole stack up into the desert sky like a mother carrying a calf on her back. If you have never seen a photograph of this, stop what you're doing later and go look it up. A spaceship riding piggyback on an airliner. It looks impossible. It looks like a model somebody glued together wrong. But it flew. They worked up to the big day, careful and slow, the way you should. First, they did taxi tests. Then they flew the 747 with Enterprise on top, but nobody aboard the orbiter, just to see how the whole thing handled. Then they put a crew up in Enterprise while she was still bolted down to the mothership, engines running on the big jet, the shuttle crew flipping switches and running through everything, still attached. Captive flights, they called them, getting comfortable, building trust in the machinery. And then came the August 12th, the day they were going to let go. Picture that morning out on Rogers Dry Lake. If you've never stood on a desert lake bed, let me paint it for you. It is flat, flat like the ocean is flat, cracked mud baked hard as a highway, running out to the mountains in every direction, shimmering in the heat before 8 in the morning. That lake bed at Edwards is where they'd been breaking the sound barrier and killing test pilots and making legends for 30 years. Chuck Yeager country, the air smells like dust and jet fuel and creosote brush, and on this particular morning it is dead quiet, and then it isn't because four Pratt & Whitney engines on that 747 start winding up. In the cockpit of Enterprise, up top two men. The commander was Fred Haise. And that name ought to ring a bell for you, because Fred Haise was one of the three men aboard Apollo 13. He was the fellow who was supposed to walk on the moon and never got to, because an oxygen tank blew up 200,000 miles from home and turned a moon landing into the greatest rescue in the history of flying. Fred Haise had already ridden a crippled spacecraft home once, cold and dark and running out of everything. Now here he was again, about to fall out of the sky in an untested glider. Some men just keep raising their hand, beside him in the right seat, Gordon Fullerton, sharp stick, Air Force man. One of the calmest voices you'd ever want next to you when things got interesting. Now on this first free flight, Enterprise was wearing something she wouldn't wear later. She had a tail cone, a big smooth fairing bolted over her backside, over the spot where the three main engines would eventually go. Because in real life, an orbiter's tail end is a mess of engine bells and blunt metal, and that makes turbulence, ugly buffeting air rolling off the back. For these first flights, they smoothed it over with that cone so the ride would be cleaner and easier to figure out. It made her fly better, longer glide, gentler manners. They take the cone off later, once they trusted her and find out how she flew ugly, but not today, up they went. Climbing, turning, the two airplanes as one, out over the desert, 24,000 feet and climbing, the 747 working hard under all that weight. And then the mothership noses over into a shallow dive. You dive so that when you cut the shuttle loose, it lifts cleanly up and away from you instead of settling down onto your own tail. The whole procedure had been figured to the last detail. Count it down, arm it. Seven explosive bolts held Enterprise to the back of that 747. And on the call, those bolts fired. Just like that, she was free. First time in her life, that spaceship was flying on her own. Haise pulled her up and away, and down below him the 747 rolled off hard to the left and dove away to the right, getting clear, and for the first time in the history of the world there were two airplanes in the sky that a moment ago had been one, and the one on top had no engine at all. Now the clock is running, and it doesn't run long. Enterprise is a glider now, and a heavy one, and she is coming down. Not gently. She's descending at better than 10,000 feet a minute at times, nose pitched way down, riding a glide slope so steep it would give an airline passenger a heart attack. This is normal. This is how she's built to come home. Steep and fast, trading altitude for speed, because speed is the only thing keeping her flying. Haise has got her. He rolls into his turns, feels her out. And the reports coming down are good. She flies. She flies honest. She does what the man asks her to do. All those years of wind tunnels and computers and arguments, and here it was, real, a human hand on the controls of a spacecraft in the open air, and she answered. The whole free flight lasted a little more than 5 minutes. That's it, 5 minutes and change, from the drop to the wheels. He lines her up on the lake bed, and here's the thing about landing on Rogers Dry Lake. The runway is drawn on the mud, but the whole desert floor is landable, miles of it, which is a mercy for a glider that gets one try. Down, she comes faster than any airplane you've ever flown. Well over 180 knots across the fence, nose held off, that big white delta wing settling into ground effect over the hard pan, and the main gear kissed the lakebed, rolled out, nose came down. Enterprise, a spaceship, was sitting still on the desert floor, having flown herself home, with two men aboard who steered her every foot of the way, dust hanging in the air. That desert quiet coming back, and a whole lot of engineers who suddenly remembered to breathe. They flew her four more times that fall, took the tail cone off partway through, flew her in her ugly true shape, blunt tail and all, and on one of those later landings she got to bouncing a little. What the pilots called a pilot-induced oscillation, porpoising down the lake bed before it settled. And they learned from that too. That's the whole point of a test program. You go find the bad news yourself on your own terms, at Edwards in a glider, where a bad day is a rough landing and not a funeral. Every single space shuttle landing that came after, and there were well over 100 of them, every orbiter that ever came screaming back from orbit and rolled to a stop on a runway at Edwards, or at the Cape, every one of them traced straight back to that morning. Back to Fred Haise's and Gordon Fullerton, falling off the back of a 747 over the Mojave, and proving that a human being could land the thing. Enterprise herself never went any higher than a 747 could carry her. She got used up for other tests, shaken and rattled and studied, and finally she became a museum piece. You can go see her today, sitting in a museum in New York on top of an old aircraft carrier on the Hudson River. Folks walk right past her, and half of them have no idea that this was the one that went first. The one that proved it could be done, but you know now. And here's the part I want you to carry out of the hangar today. That whole flying machine idea, wheels down on a runway, come home like an airplane, fly it again. That was a promise made by people who believed a spacecraft ought to behave like an honest airplane. and on the 12th of August, 1977, two pilots and one strange engineless bird made good on it. Everything is theory until somebody puts their hands on the controls and finds out. My thanks today to the folks at NASA and the flight test records out of Dryden and Edwards, whose careful accounts keep this day alive, and to every engineer who ever signed off on a test card knowing a friend was going to go fly it.
You can find us anytime at radiohanger.com. This is Taildragger, and this has been The Hangar. Next time you see a picture of a spaceship riding on the back of an airliner, you tip your hat. That was the beginning of the whole thing. See you next time.